This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information, advertising opportunities, and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 34 with Juan Salto and is brought to you by the Computer Information Agency. For more information, visit us on the web at www.ciaops.com. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. For this episode, I'm joined by Juan Salto. Juan, how are you going?
Good. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Really excited to be here.
No worries. Thanks very much for that. And again, as we start off all these podcasts, what we'll do is I'll just throw over to you and get you to introduce yourself to the listeners.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. I am Juan Salto. I'm a Microsoft Access MVP. And my specialty is using Microsoft Access with SQL Server. I do a lot of events around the nation, SQL Saturdays, Access groups, SQL Server groups. And I speak extensively on a topic. I have a blog at accessexperts.net/blog, as well as I write a lot of articles or posts for the official Microsoft Access blog. So I love doing these community events because I want to share my expertise with other people.
Well, that's great. I think that's really good that we've got someone with your expertise on, because we see, you know, Microsoft Access out there and as an option, but perhaps people aren't as up to date or aren't as aware of the power of the product. So maybe we can start off by giving us an idea of one of the topics you mentioned to me was about starting a computer practice, and I think this would be a benefit to many listeners who are out there typically in the smaller space.
Yeah, I started my practice when I was an IT manager for a firm in Chicago, and I started moonlighting. I think that's the path a lot of people take, where they take on clients and they help them evenings and weekends. And in my case, it got to be too much, and I had to make a decision whether to go full-time or not. And because I was young and I wanted to start my own business, I started to, once I gained enough clients, I decided to just go full-time. And the nice thing about that is the employer who I was at became one of my first customers. So I walked out Friday as an employee, walked in as a consultant, making a lot more money with them.
Okay, and what sort of business was that that you were in there?
Well, in that case, it was a food ice cream ingredients manufacturer, which didn't do well for my diet. we would make chocolate-covered peanuts, syrups, and we actually required to taste the products off the production line. So, poor me, I had to go to the lab and taste cookie dough and chocolate-covered peanuts almost every day, make sure it was okay.
So back then, was that the Access? You were doing the Access as early as back then?
No, Microsoft Access back then, there was other platforms such as Paradox for Windows, which was what I started with, and a little bit of Access. Mostly back then, it was Paradox for Windows. A lot of our listeners may remember that. Paradox for Windows came from Paradox for DOS, and then some can say it came from DBase 3 and 4. So I started that path, and then when I went to my practice, I was doing half networking and half programming. And I quickly realized that the networking and hardware support has its challenges, unique challenges. And sometimes, for example, I would move a piece of equipment, and it would go bad. And so the client would tell me, well, it was working fine until you touched it, right? So that, a couple of other things, I decided to focus on the consulting, the programming side, and creating software. And I've been doing that since 1994. I've been very happy with that part of it. You know, this world is run by software. And so if you're able to create software, you're in a much better position than, I believe, than doing the networking or hardware stuff, or the hardware side of the business.
So you made a conscious decision to move away from the hardware side of it, just get into the programming?
Yeah, get into the programming practice of it and creating programs. One of my first projects was creating a Access program that was used at sea by a firm that no longer exists. They would lay pipe on the ocean floor. and they would go out from the beach and towards the oil platforms and lay down miles and miles of pipes on the ocean floor. They called me up and says, we need a program to record the other quality aspects of it, and it has to be durable enough to withstand the sea. The equipment has to. So we worked with equipment vendors in that case and got them a nice solution that will allow them to document the process in a much quicker time than we're doing it by pen and paper.
Okay, so you know, what sort of you know, applications use Access with?
Okay, we're back.
Now we're back. Okay, that's fine. Just keep going. So, okay. What sort of you know, applications are you seeing popular, or is there a common theme for the Access in the businesses that you're working with?
Yeah, a lot of times we get called to bring in, we're brought in to work on custom proposal and invoice systems. You know, a lot of these firms, they have to use QuickBooks or a lot of the other accounting packages in the market. And usually when somebody calls me up, that's the first thing I ask them, have you tried QuickBooks? Because it costs $200 as opposed to spending thousands of dollars with us and doing the software development. And so we tend to do a lot of custom proposal systems that drive data to Word and fill out templates in Word, and then the template in Word becomes the proposal, and they can email that to the client. We also do a lot of work order systems that record time and labor, materials used on work orders. And it tends to be on applications that complement whatever software they currently have in the enterprise. So if they have a big ERP package that costs them millions of dollars, sometimes, you know, they rather spend $30,000 with us as opposed to spending $100,000 with the ERP vendor because of our track record and the fact that we can do it much faster and quicker.
Okay, so is your business just yourself, or do you have, you know, others in business helping you?
I'm fortunate enough to be joined by another Access MVP, Ben Clothier, who is an author, book author on Access with SharePoint. That's his expertise. I also have Mark Burns, who is the administrator for the largest Access group of developers on LinkedIn, Professional Microsoft Access Developer Network, or PMADN. And right now it's just us two, and we're a small firm, but between the three of us, it's a virtual company. Mark works out of Pennsylvania, and Ben works out of Texas. I'm here in Chicago.
So obviously now that you know the business is established and all that sort of thing, and you've moved outside of the business that was employing you, how did you find getting, you know, new customers? Were they coming to you through word of mouth, or did you do anything active to actually solicit business?
Well, that's a great point, because back then there was the internet was just starting, and Yahoo.com was there, but not Google.com. And so back then it was mostly word of mouth. There was no AdWords or advertising available on the internet back then in the sense you have now. But nowadays, if you're considering to start a practice, whether in Australia or in the U.S., you really have some great advantages I didn't have back when I started, which was Google advertising. And then Bing also offers keyword advertising. And the nice thing about that is somebody can type in Microsoft Access Developer Chicago, and my ad would come up. And so we use Google advertising extensively to get our clients. You know, the nice thing about Access is our Access projects last weeks, sometimes months, but not years. So we usually are always looking for new work to do, and we use Google advertising. When we first started, it was only $200 a month, but now we are up to around $3,000 a month, and we'll turn it on, get our work, and then turn it off, and then turn it back on once we work off the projects we're getting.
Okay.
Just a wonderful way to get clients.
Oh, it's interesting, because the experience I've had generally has not been particularly good with Google AdWords, but again, slightly different market. I mean, how do you go about crafting that ad? You know, the words that would you know modify the words that you purchase and that you use, or do you, like I said, base it on projects you've done? I mean, how do you, again, what's your strategy behind using, you know, what you actually put into those AdWords?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Where basically, when you do the ads and what you want to select the keywords, you want to put yourself in the mindset of your customer. We work a lot with department managers and owners. They're not necessarily have an IT background, so they'll type in Microsoft Access Developer or Microsoft Access Help or Microsoft Access Programmer. They're not going to type in what a CIO would type in, maybe, which is the word developer. You know, the word developer, you and I are familiar with that word, but somebody who owns a business or a department manager may just say programmer, and he'll type in Microsoft Access Programmer. So, you know, you really got to keep in mind who your target market is going to be. Like I said, don't work with a lot of CIOs. And so I put myself in the mindset of those department managers or owners who just need help with Microsoft Access.
So I suppose who are the people that are contacting you? Who are the people doing the searches on the internet looking for you and contacting you initially and saying, look, we need help to do this? You know, what sort of positions are they in?
You know, one of the things is you have to realize if they turn to Google and the internet, it's probably because they're already exhausted their own personal networks and looking for help, right? Usually, if somebody who has a need for Microsoft Office, they may turn to a colleague or another owner, say, hey, do you know anybody who knows Microsoft Access? And the last resort would be to go to Google and pluck somebody out of nowhere they'd never known and try to trust them with $1,000 or thousands of dollars of work. So it's important to us that when they call, we give them a good 1 hour free analysis of what they're trying to do. And during that hour, we can close the deal. So it's not just the AdWords and the website, which you also need. You need, everybody needs a personal website to use Google AdWords, I mean, a corporate website. But also, you know, understanding why they're calling you. They're calling you out of desperation. They don't have anybody else to turn to. And grabbing that call right away and be able to follow up on them right away is key, because they'll just go to the next person on the Google AdWords down the list.
So how are they contacting you? Are they sending you an email, or do they actually, you know, give you a call? I mean, how do they actually make contact?
Yeah, you know, I would say 50% of the times they go to our website, because the Google AdWords takes them to our website. And from there, they fill in the contact form. 50% of the time, we get that. The other 50% of the time is they'll give us a call and ask us if we can help them out. And that's why it's so important that when you do Google AdWords advertising, you pick up the phone right away. Because otherwise, they'll just hang up. You get your voicemail, they'll just hang up and call the next person on the website list, on the Google search list. You know, trying to entice people to click on your ad is also a challenge. What words we use and phrases is, you know, again, we're trying to put ourselves in the mindset of the department manager or owner who's searching for us. So one of our ads says, we're not programmers, we're miracle workers. We know code. And that little ad of we're not programmers, we're miracle workers is our number one ad, successful ad, in the sense that it puts a person at ease that they're really talking with some experts. At least we're boasting, right, that we're experts. And then when they give us a call, we confirm them. You know, they go to our website, right? So here's the process. They click on the ad, they go to our website. Our website is really nice, accessexperts.net, professionally driven, professionally done, well done, easy to use, has all the information on there, and so they're motivated to call. So it's important that when you spend money with Google and you're driving traffic to your website, you really have to have a great-looking website.
Okay, so the website, did you do it or did you outsource it, or how did you go about, you know, developing that website?
You know, I used to have a department. I'm the president of the firm, so I used to have a web department. But now what we use is WordPress technology. You really can. It's really easy these days to buy yourself a $50 WordPress template, customize it to your needs, and literally have a website overnight that's really nice. Our current website is built on WordPress. That's what you see when you go over there. And so there's really no excuse these days to not have a website if you're thinking about starting a firm or you're thinking about being a consultant. You have to have a great-looking website that inspires confidence, professionalism, and really encourages the person to call.
So, I mean, part of the, I think part of the issue with the website and potentially the Google the Google ads and that, you obviously need to refresh them and update them and change them a bit. I mean, is that true that you found that you do need to, you know, constantly be refreshing them?
Well, one of the things we did is early on, we decided to have a blog on our site as opposed to going to blogger.com or another service that hosts blogs. We decided to incorporate a blog, and since all of us here are required to write at least one post a month, we had fresh content on our website every month. And that's important for Google natural rankings, but for Google paid AdWords, not as important, right? Mm. Mostly the blog is for other professionals who need help, people who will probably never end up calling you. You know, our blog is not designed, I mean, it'd be great if we got more clients out of it, but mostly it's helping other people with access and sharing our knowledge with the community.
Okay, so just speaking on community, I mean the involvement you have obviously with the MVP and all that. What other, you know, community things are you espousing with the access?
Well, there is the if you haven't seen this website, you really need to check it out. So it's sqlsaturday.com. At, most people call it SQLSaturday.com, which is a one-day event held on a Saturday with lots of sessions on SQL Server. We'll focus exclusively on SQL Server. And I go and I do those sessions. The next one's going to be in Kansas City on August 4th, where I'll be talking about how to start your own consulting practice. And it's just a great way to go out there and meet other people, gain a lot of knowledge on one Saturday, even if you're not SQL Server focus. It's just a wonderful opportunity to see the topics involved and be able to learn more about SQL Server. And that's one way. The other one is I'm heavily involved with user groups. I'll do these kinds of presentations that we're doing now over the web with Microsoft Access user groups. And also I'm heavily involved with the local Chicago Access users group here as well. So, you know, our community work is really important to us. We love doing it, and it's just a great way of sharing our knowledge.
So on the user group and the community side of it, I mean, how are you finding, is that a growing area? Are you finding more people getting into that? I think that I come from a small business server user group sort of background, and there's been a lot of challenges recently around that area, and that could be because of the change and the move away from hardware and networking infrastructure, and perhaps in your case you're seeing the flow on into the access, the SQL, because they're more software driven. I mean, are you seeing an uptick in members, in membership and interests in your groups?
No, that's a good point. In Microsoft Access, no. Now, usually we have a more mature crowd on the Access user group side. You don't see a lot of young faces, and that's a concern for me because a lot of younger folks are being steered to .NET and web development, and that's fine. If that's what you want to do, that's great. But there is alternative, which is Microsoft Access Career, where you provide solutions to businesses through Microsoft Access. And there's some advantages Access has over web and .NET. Number one is cost. You know, the solutions that we develop here take weeks as opposed to months with .NET or web. And so the timeline is a lot shorter. The cost is roughly half of what it'd be with those other technologies. So, you know, it's important to me that I engage more people. And that's why I'm doing this podcast. I'm hoping that I can convince more people to consider Microsoft Access as a career choice going forward.
So I think probably, you know, a lot of people, you know, in the smaller space have heard of Access and, you know, they've never really looked at it, or they use it for very basic tables, and it can seem a very daunting product to obviously firstly get into. So, I mean, if you did want to take that first step and obviously move to beyond the basics of Access programming and potentially, you know, interfacing with SQL, I mean, what's the best way to go about that in your experience?
All right, so the best way, if you want to break into the field of Microsoft Access, is really to go out and volunteer with not-for-profits. There's always a not-for-profit looking for database solutions. And so that's how I started. I called not-for-profits and I work with them to create database solutions. And at first, I wouldn't charge them as much or nothing at all. And so they really couldn't complain much about the quality of my programming, right? But, you know, once you graduate, I would approach the not-for-profit once the database was done and say, hey, would you guys happen to know of any businesses that could use my services? And what I'll do is I'll give you a 15% commission for referring me to anybody. And so they were really motivated to get me some paying kind of clients as well. The other thing is I encourage people to just let their network know that they're available for Microsoft Access programming. You know, one of the things I do is I give business cards to my wife, to my kids, to my friends, and I test them. I say, you know, I'll be at a party and I'll walk up to one of my best friends and say, hey, do you have one of my business cards? I ran out. I got this guy who wants to use my services. And he say, well, no, I ran out too. I said, well, here, so there's some more then. If you ran out, here's some more. You know, I test them, make sure that they have my business cards. And that's a little extreme, I know, but the fact is your network can be invaluable to find your business. And because Microsoft Access is a lot cheaper than web or .NET, people will start perking up when you start talking about the cost.
So I think the thing is, obviously, you're getting a fair amount of, by the sound of it, a fair amount of interest from your Google. You're getting it from your sort of your network as well. When these people come to you, obviously, the people coming from Google have physically typed in Access, you know, Access programmer or developer. But those referrals, is Access what they're actually looking for, or are they actually looking for, I need a problem to solve the storage of this or the connectivity to that? Are they specifically asking for Access skills?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And not necessarily they're going to be asking for Access. They're probably looking for the need. They probably call you up and says, I have a need for a custom invoicing system. Well, it so happens I use Access, so I'll suggest an Access solution. But you're right, you know, these people are looking for their needs and what their business problem is. And so when you design your Google Ad campaigns, you may want to design around that, as well as regional area. I live in Chicago, so I first started advertising in Chicago. I would add the word Chicago to my Google AdWords just because I wanted to focus locally. Now we focus the whole nation. But our website is optimized for natural search rankings in Chicago, so I encourage anybody out there to first start locally with a metropolis or region, advertising and configuring your website so it comes up naturally for that region. And think about the needs and having case – we have a lot of case studies on our website of work we've done for other clients, and that helps a lot as well.
Okay, so those case studies, do you create those, or again, do you outsource that to somebody else?
Well, no, that's I love to write, so I've written all those case studies, and they're just a few paragraphs, a few pages explaining what we did to for other clients. And being able to expose our abilities that way and be able to document on our website what is it we can do for a business, it really does help.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're starting out, you may not have as many case studies. So what you want to do is, again, you work for not-for-profits or reduced rate while you get your feet wet. And then as you learn more and become more proficient with it, you start charging more per hour.
Okay, so I mean, the customers coming to you are looking for, you know, a solution to their custom invoicing. I mean, for example, are they coming to you for web solutions? Is that sort of thing you can do? You know, I want to put this database on the web, or I want people to access this across the web, remotely accessing. I mean, is that part of the demand?
No, in terms of helping them over the web, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all we do is help people over the web because we have clients, like I said, all over the U.S. And so what will happen is once they engage us and agree to the project, we'll start at first in our office building our development machines, and then we'll transfer the work, what we call the alpha version, to the client's PC at their premises over the web. And we use join.me, a wonderful service. It's at www.join.me. It's a free service that allows us to do web conferencing calls. and we install software on the client's PC, and then many times we have a PC designated for us at the client site that we can log in remotely to work on their systems.
So when you do that work remotely, are you finding that clients are happy to do everything remotely? Is there that, you know, there's still that need to actually physically meet them? And I mean, you know, again, in this internet-based economy, I mean, you're finding that that's now not a resistance point where people say, oh, you know, I if I can't see you, I don't sort of trust you. Is that?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I have $100,000 clients. I still have never seen them face to face. And so, the people are much more accepting now. And just to give you an idea, we stopped advertising in Chicago because we would notice that when we get a lead in Chicago, we have to get in the car in the morning, go see them, get dressed, shave, go see them. And then you can easily lose 4 hours on a prospect that may not end up buying at all. As opposed to the web, we have that 1 hour where we go over their analysis, and usually I can close them. And when I'm also a sales guy, I can close them 1 hour, and then I give them a rough estimate. I give them a rough number. I say, well, I'm going to give you a number after I listen to you. This is, you know, don't hold me to it, but it's going to be $20,000, and that's within your budget. I can give you a formal proposal. And they tell me, yeah, that sounds about right. Go ahead and send me that formal proposal. And then I spend 3 or 4 hours working on that proposal that I can send to them. You know, we get a lot of calls, as you can imagine, and sometimes we get calls that people are price shopping. I immediately can spot those. As I know, this person is price shopping. He may already have a developer in mind. All he needs is a simple quote, and I don't bother too much with those. But I would say 75% of our calls, they call us once, and we get them to commit to a project, which is great.
Okay, so I mean, obviously that you're able to, you know, compete across the web, and you're using the Google Word, you know, the options there with Google. But what's, you know, isn't any of your competition able to do the same sort of thing? I mean, how are you able to stand out against somebody else when effectively it's becoming a level playing field?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, when we first started doing Google AdWords, we pay a dollar click, we pay $1.50 per click. Now we're up to $10 a click. And so we have a daily budget of $150. And that could mean up to $3,000 a month in Google. But that $3,000 a month is bringing in anywhere between $15,000 and $100,000 worth of work. So to us, it really is a no-brainer. We just finished a month of advertising. I think we spent $1,800. And we got a major client that we closed $50,000 worth of work on. So that 1800 brought us $50,000 worth of work in 1 month. And that's what we experienced with Google. So, you know, I know it sounds like a lot, paying $10 per click. And, you know, honestly, if you don't have a $150 budget, it would sound like a lot to you, $150 a day. But the nature of computer consulting is such that a client is going to spend thousands of dollars with you. So if you're able to spend $50, $75 a day, and really fine-tune your advertising, that's going to pay off tremendous dividends going forward. Now, I pay $10 a click because I want to be the first one at the list, at the top. And the reason is I get the most calls that way. Now, I was getting calls when I was in the second or third list as well. When I was second and number two and number three, I was getting calls. I was spending $4 or $5 a click. But I quickly realized I wanted to be first. And so I'm spending more, but then again, I turn it off when I have the work I have in hand, and then I turn it back on later.
So the Google, you know, the way you configure it and the experience you've had, I mean, is that all self-taught? Have you ever done anything formal or had a consultant come in? Is it all simply just self-taught and you've tweaked and adjusted what you find works?
Yeah, it's all self-taught. I mean, I've read a lot online, and it's just there's a whole cottage industry involved with Google AdWords and SEO, search engine optimization. And so, for me, it's mostly been self-taught and using the Google tools that Google provides with you, such as the analytics and analysis tools that allow you to tell who's visiting your site from where and where they're coming from.
Okay, so I mean, I think that's a takeaway, obviously, is that I would agree with you that the tools that are out there, the ones that are free and the ones that are low cost, are extremely powerful and provide extremely detailed, information and results. And again, if you're not taking advantage of them, then chances are your competition is using that and getting the one up on you.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the Google Analytics itself is just a wonderful tool. So everybody should have a website, and everybody should use Google Analytics to get under more understanding of who's visiting your website from where, how they're getting there, what keywords are they using, what geography are they coming from. Just a wonderful set of tools that make it easier to see the effectiveness of your website.
Okay, so I mean, part of the move obviously is that you've got access, and you know that I suppose, is it true to say that that works up to a certain limit, a certain data size, and then at some point you need to start considering SQL as your storage mechanism? I mean, is there such a point, and at what point is that?
You know, when I do these presentations on my slide deck, slide 3 says that SQL Server is the best thing that ever happened to Microsoft Access. And it's just because the nature of the Access Jet engine, that's the database engine that comes with Access, it's just not really designed for a multi-user and stable environment. Now, pretty much when people call us up and they need something done from us, if it's going to be more than just a couple of users, we right away we take them to SQL Server to store their data. I mean, it's just not a question at all for us. We basically use SQL Server for almost everything we do here with our solutions, especially when you got SQL Server Express, which is free. And lately we've been doing a lot of hosting. We have our own cloud hosting for SQL Server. So we use the cloud hosting when you want an app that can be worked anywhere in the US, at a cafe or at a home or at a workplace. We store the data for our clients over the web.
Okay, so that's, I suppose that's another interesting question. I mean, how are you finding the move to the cloud, in inverted commas? I mean, there's a lot of hype, there's a lot of talk on the on one side, and there's also a lot of hesitancy on the others because it's unknown and my data's stored not on my own site. I mean, you see that accelerating from your side?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are the same questions people have. You know, the first thing they say, well, I don't want my data on the web. And I said, well, I don't think you should have your data in your business. And I'll tell you why. I mean, you might have a fire, or somebody, the computer hardware may crash, or somebody might steal your data, or you can steal your computer, break a window at night, steal your computer with all the data, you're gone. It's gone, and you don't get it again. And so, one nice thing about having the data in the cloud is protected, it's encrypted. We only do encrypted communications between the server and the client PC. And it gets backed up on an hourly basis and also on a nightly basis. So I can argue that the data in the cloud may be more secure than the data at the local business.
Okay, so I mean, how do you see, your practice and Access fitting into something like, Office 365? Is there room for that? Can that be something that you can utilize and gain benefit from?
Yeah, there's no question Office 365 is coming a long way in the recent months in terms of offering services that rival what we do in the cloud, but they're still not there. I'll give you a couple examples. Office 365 data storage, which is the SQL Server solution, right, doesn't allow you to run jobs. You can't run a job every night to, for example, automatically close out orders that have been shipped or close out proposals that are expired. It's not as easy to back up your data from Office 365 to a local computer. And they ask you to specify an IP for every user. And sometimes you don't know the IP because you're using Panera Bread or Starbucks to access the internet. So it does have its drawbacks. It's not for everybody.
Okay, so I mean, another technology that's out there that seems to be gaining momentum is, the Windows Azure platform. I mean, is that something you're involved with?
Yeah, Windows Azure, I think that's what I just talked. I believe I was confusing Office 365 with Windows Azure, but that's what really what I mentioned. Windows Azure storage standpoint, which is the SQL Server side of it, has all those drawbacks I just mentioned about the IP address and not being able to run jobs and not be able to back up as easy. And the, you know, to give micro credit to Microsoft, they are slowly working to take to fix these issues. So I see a time soon where we may all be using Azure services because it's going to be ready for prime time.
Okay, so I mean, it obviously is not quite there in your experience, and like I said, it may get to that sort of level. Microsoft certainly seems to be throwing a lot of resources behind it. Is it, you know, if you're looking to get into to the programming, the development, do you think it's a big step to move from learning something like Access, which is, you know, typically a desktop solution, at least initially, but, you know, being able to move to this cloud, the cloud environment with something like Windows Azure?
You know, making that leap to Windows Azure from Access, you mean the developer considering to take that tool set and using it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's not going to be as easy as maybe learning Microsoft Access, but it's hugely rewarding. The ability to be able to tap into SQL Server and Azure into your application cycle allows you to provide more stable solutions to your clients in terms of the data and the speed and the analysis. Everything is improved, but you do need to learn about SQL Server. You do need to learn how to properly design tables and be able to create scripts and learn more about SQL Server. And sometimes, you know, it can be a lot of work to do it, but it's very satisfying.
Okay, so let's take it back to a typical deployment. You get a call from somebody, or you know, a contact from somebody over the web. They need a project done. You know, what are the stages that you go through? So, for example, you know, do you do a proof of concept, or do you just roll up your sleeves and get into it, or are there milestones, or how do you go about you know, doing a project for a client? Is it something that's relatively standard, or it's something that's unique in each and every case?
Well, I personally think because of my extensive background in business, I'm able to provide solutions to people. You know, I spent a lot of years in the industry, both in the manufacturing and distribution of pharmaceuticals, food, and cosmetic devices. And so I'm able to tap into those years of experience. So when somebody calls and they tell me, I have a need for a warehouse application that uses barcodes to keep track of inventory, I understand exactly all those components that are involved. You know, I have the need to hire people over the years, and one of the things I'm looking for is somebody who knows at least what PO means, which is purchase order, or what AP means, which is accounts payable. So our number one rule here at AccessExperts.net is we want to understand the business problem first before we do any coding or quotes. And that's why we take that 1 hour to sit down with the client and go over. And sometimes we need more than 1 hour. Sometimes we need 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. But at the end of that time, we gain knowledge of what the business problem is. Because really what we are is business consultants who happen to use Microsoft Access and SQL Server to solve a business problem. And so that's our number one rule. Understand the business problem first before you start coding. Every time I violate that rule, I end up with a project that's disastrous or lost.
Okay, so when you do a project, is it, you know, do you do a fixed fee, or is it a per hour, or is it, you know, how do you typically scope out, you know, what to charge the customer?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I do fixed fee, and I'll tell you, usually I'll do my first project as fixed fee, unless it's a really complex project that I haven't had no experience with, and in terms of the industry or the issue involved, and so I won't accept the fixed fee. But 50% of the times I do fixed fee, and that's to put the client at ease, because they call you, let's face it, they call you based on a small ad they saw on Google. And so you know, a lot of times they'll call me up and say, well, you know, I wanted to be able to do this project, but, you know, I don't want to do hourly, because they have this nightmare of somebody charging them a horrendous amount of hours. And those time, those part times I do that project, sometimes I end up losing money in the sense that I end up putting more hours than I thought I would do, but I've gained a customer in the process. And after that, I charge them on an hourly basis to improve that product or any other projects that come along the pike. I just tell them, you know, it's going to be hourly from here on out. And they understand. They've seen the quality of my work at that point, and they really do appreciate it.
So you do an initial project for a client, and that's all done and wrapped off, and everybody's is happy. Do they normally then, you know, roll into a new project, or they, you know, go quiet, or, you know, for a month or two, or, you know, what's the typical thing? Is it once you engage them, the work just keeps flowing?
Yeah, it usually does. We have clients, I would say 25% of our clients go dark. We don't hear from again. The other 75%, they have ongoing maintenance, additional fixes, because what happens is they see the great job we did for them, and they get excited. And so once we deliver the alpha version, they want to start right away. Oh, we need to, let's go ahead and do this. Can I do that? Can I do something? You know, one of the things we tell our clients is we can make access, sing, and dance. So there really isn't no limit to what we can do with the product because we're that good with it. And they see our work and right away, oh, can let's make it do that. Let me get do that. So I need to calm them down. So well, we need to wait until version 2 for that or version 3. And let's just address the mission critical stuff first. I like to say that, mission critical. I tell them, you know, let's do that the business absolutely needs on this first version. All the other stuff we'll get to in the second version.
Okay. So obviously, you know, you go in there and you do a good job, and then they see your you know, the benefits of using yourself. Do they come to you and say, look, you know, we need someone to do infrastructure, or, you know, do they try and expand that, you know, what they'd like you to do, or is it stays very specifically focused on you know, the solutions you provide?
No, they pretty much ask us. They start asking us more and more about other situations and other ways we can help them with their software. And can, you know, we can interface with other plants, or can they interface with other software. And so, you know, we pretty much limit ourselves to the software side of the business, as opposed to trying to expand with hardware networking. But yeah, they, you know, they turn to us as trusted advisors. Once we gain their trust, they start asking us about other aspects of the business that we can improve. And one of the things I like to do is say, look, you know, I know I'm a cost center in your software and your accounting system, but I see myself as a profit center because I'm going to save you time. I'm going to improve performance. My software is going to allow you to do more with less. And it should pay for itself in 12 months or less. And that's another way I can convince people to do the project because, you know, I have to believe in it. That's another thing. I get calls here sometimes. People call me up, and I don't get what they're trying to do. I'll be frank with them. I really don't understand what your business problem is. Or they'll call me up and they don't want to do it right. They want to, you know, they want a $20,000 solution for it and spend only $1,000. Or it really is not going to work. I'll give you an example of that. I once got a call from an architecture firm that wanted me to design a database that kept track of all the pipes in the plant where they were connected. So pipe A gets connected to B and C, pipe B gets connected to E and F, and pipe J. And, you know, when you start looking at the database design for a situation like that, pipes connected to multiple pipes, it can get daunting. And I ended up not taking the project. So I need to be able to believe that it can be done on a database.
Okay, so, you know, you know, obviously, when you become a trusted advisor, and then the client you know, turns to you for things potentially that you're, you know, that's not your specific vertical or your specific expertise. What do you do with those sort of opportunities? Do you have a network of partners yourself that you turn to, or what would be your, you know, response to the client? No, we don't do it, or we recommend this, or, you know, again, how do you deal with that sort of situation?
Yeah, we do have a network of partners. We have partners that do a lot of .NET in addition to Microsoft Access. And so we'll pass the information on to them. We do get sometimes calls from people that we just can't help because it doesn't our skill set is not there to help them out, and that's what we do.
Okay, so would you say that it's also, you know, part of the community, part of the building is reaching out to obviously businesses that are, you know, that have different skill sets to what you have?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my favorite things to do is to partner up with firms that do networking only. They do they'll install networks, they do wiring, they do server configurations, but they have no programming. And so I firmly believe that they're leaving a lot of money on the table because they don't have the resource to help a client with their software. So I like partnering up with them and be able to work with their clients on software solutions.
And again, is that something that you found that works well? Is it, you know, take a while to find a good partner, or, you know, what's your experience with, you know, those sort of partnerships?
Yeah, it works well when it happens. You know, a lot of these firms are so busy with the trees, they miss the forest. And so it's always a good opportunity for me to circle back with them from time to time and, you know, reintroduce myself and talk to them and see how we can help their clients and keep us in mind.
Okay. All right, so we're drawing sort of close to our time now, but probably what we'll look at you know, discussing as a rounding off topic is maybe you can give us some idea, being an Access MVP and you know, having a bit of insight into the product. I mean, you know, what's coming down the pipe for Access and, you know, SQL and those sort of things? What sort of do you see exciting you about the product and wanting you to stay involved with it and keep using it for solutions and with clients?
Well, you know, Access 2010 introduced the first time the concept of Access Web Services that allow you to use SharePoint to publish your database to the web. And that was really a radical approach. It was something that we did not see coming. And so the Access team has spent a lot of time in the next version expanding upon that theme. And so what I see Access happening is becoming a easy way to be able to publish apps to the cloud. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I'll be the first one to tell you that a lot of these .NET developers who do web solutions would kill to have that easy functionality to be able to design the Access forms and tables and Access and press the button and it gets uploaded to the web for your consumerism in the web. So I'll give you a couple of instances where you have, for example, a thousand person company and you need a quick way to publish an app on SharePoint. Well, you publish that app and now it's available on SharePoint. It gets backed up on SharePoint. The data is in SharePoint. So IT does like the fact that you can publish these databases to the web. Now, what Microsoft has done is made us all web developers. So now not only are we X developers, but web developers, and be able to provide that. But the drawback, I view this as version 1.0 of web services. A drawback to 1.0 version is not as powerful as we would love it to have be. You can only use macros, not code. So the next version of Access, I expect them to be able to address some of those challenges and eventually make it just as powerful on the web as it is on the desktop, which it isn't now. It won't be for a while.
Okay, so, I mean, what you're saying is that you potentially that one of the key items of success for Access going forward would be the SharePoint platform, providing a standard base on which to obviously do this web publishing and fast application development.
Correct. And be able to pair up with SharePoint and do this is really an easy way to get web apps out there. You know, and the fact that database, X database running in the browser, not just Internet Explorer, but also runs on Chrome and also runs in Safari. So you can tailor your web apps to iPhones, iPads, Android devices, the screen size of those devices. And so now we have a platform that is worldwide. So one example of that is we designed a safety app that allows our clients to launch a browser on their iPhone and walk around the building or construction site identifying issues with safety. It could be a blocked entrance, it could be cable that's exposed, it could be improperly labeled containers. And they jot that down in our app, and then they come back to the desk, and they fire up a full version of Access, which downloads the data and allows them to assign those safety violations to vendors to, for corrective action. So we've developed, we designed in the past three-level solution, the iPhone, access in the cloud, and full-blown access to be able to capitalize on all of those elements.
Okay, so I think probably, like I said, what's your advice to people? Obviously, if they've been motivated by what you've been speaking about and interested in becoming more an access developer or getting into involved with the product more or being utilizing it to resolve issues for clients. I mean, what's the best place to start? What should they basically go out and do immediately?
Yeah, if you really want to get started with access development, you really need to, a lot of people use books because they now I'm a book guy. I'll sit down with a book and I'll read it cover to cover over a couple of days and learn about technology. Other people are more touchy-feely and they can turn to YouTube and see videos on the access development. But the best way to do this to launch your career, Microsoft Access is by doing. So again, if you don't have any clients, approach the not-for-profits. If you do find a client, charge them a great rate, $10 an hour, $15 an hour. And that's how I started. I started at $10 an hour. Now I charge $155 an hour. But back then, when I didn't know access, I had to start charging a lot less and give them fixed quotes. And I still do fixed quotes. And be able to grow your firm, you grow your practice until you have enough people where you can do that full time, and it's very rewarding, and you won't be disappointed.
So I suppose you see that there's still a huge opportunity for people to get into this space and make a good living.
Yeah, I do, and there are a lot of regions. Let me give you an example. We rarely get a call from somebody who's in New York, San Francisco, Miami. Where we're getting calls are from Sandusky, Ohio, Cincinnati. We're getting calls from Fort Lauderdale. Not metropolis, but rather regional areas that don't have any access developers. And if you're interested in being an access developer, I would encourage you to see who's the competition in your area. You might end up being the access guy in your area because they're calling me because there's nobody there already. And so you really need to take advantage of that and be able to exploit the fact that your current area may be starving for access developers. I got a call yesterday from a recruiter. Says, where are the access developers? I can't find any. He wants to hire me for a contract job that's 6 months a year. And so, there is a huge need out there for access developers, and I think you'll find it rewarding, like I said before.
Well, that's excellent. Well, I think that we obviously need to round it off here because we are drawing on our time, and we want to, let Jan get away to some weekend, I believe. I think it's time for you to enjoy your weekend over there. So I'd just like to take this opportunity on behalf of the listeners to thank you very much for your time. And if people want to get in contact with you, if they've got questions or they want to learn more about access development or what we've talked about today, including some very great feedback on how Google AdWords are working for you, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, the easiest way is to go to our website, accessexperts.net. And there is a contact tab, and you'll be able to send me an email from there, and I'd love to hear from your listeners.
Excellent. Well, at this stage, I hope that a lot of people have taken that on board, and I certainly agree that I think that we're moving to a developer-based world. You need to have experience with the coding, and again, the infrastructure stuff is becoming very much a commodity, and we've learnt today there's a huge amount of opportunity, and again, access is a fairly common program, easy to get in on the ground floor. So again, I think that a lot of people hopefully will see the opportunity, and again, look to it as providing solutions for their client, and who knows, they may even look to do it as a career path, because obviously there's still a great need for developers in that area. So once again, I thank you very much for your time today, and what I'll do now is sign off from the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.